In the dark of night, one light still yet burns. Frightened fingers tremble as brittle pages turn. Fireside Mystery Theater presents The Midnight Reading, a summer series of dramatic recitations of dark masterpieces in miniature by the masters of the macabre. Good evening. I'm Ali Silva. It's the 1920s. The cafes and literary salons of New York City are bubbling with energy, cresting on a high with new waves of creative promise and possibility. At the center of it all is the famous, and at times infamous, gathering of literary giants at the Algonquin Hotel on 59 West 44th Street in Manhattan. On a typical afternoon, you might find the various colorful members of the Algonquin Roundtable trading witty and cutting remarks offset with bits of gossip. Dorothy Parker is there sharing a laugh with Robert Benchley. And there's the New Yorker magazine founder Harold Ross looking a bit distracted and pensive. Beside him, the usually mute comedian Harpo Marx is chatting it up with his pal Alexander Wolcott. Alexander Wolcott. Now, there's a name that doesn't ring as many bells as it once did. Wolcott is probably better remembered for the company he kept, as opposed to his large output of essays and criticism for the much-esteemed New Yorker magazine. By most accounts, Wolcott was renowned for his acidic barbs and put-downs, but who knew that the man had it in him to etch such a splendid tale of terror on one of his off days? Moonlight Sonata is that tale, and it will come as a real surprise to anyone who is familiar with Wolcott's work and persona. Here to read Alexander Wolcott's atypical tale of terror, Moonlight Sonata, is Mr. James Reeser.
If this report were to be published in its own England, I would have to cross my fingers in a little foreword explaining that all the characters were fictitious. Which stern requirement of the British libel law would embarrass me slightly because none of the characters is fictitious. And the story told to Catherine Cornell by Clemens Dane and by Catherine Cornell told to me chronicles what, to the best of my knowledge and belief, actually befell a young English physician, whom I shall call Alvin Barrack, because that does not happen to be his name. It is an account of a hitherto unreported adventure he had 2 years ago when he went down into Kent to visit an old friend. Let us call him Ellery Cazalet, who spent most of his days on the links, and most of his nights wondering how he would ever pay the death duties on the collapsing family manor house to which he had indignantly fallen heir. This was a shabby little cousin to Compton Wynyates, with roof tiles of Tudor red making it cozy in the noonday sun, and a hoarse bell which, from the clock tower, had been contemptuously scattering the hours like coins ever since Henry VIII was a rosy stripling. Within, Cazalet could afford only a doddering couple to fend for him, and the once sumptuous gardens did much as they pleased, under the care of a single gardener. I think I must risk giving the gardener's real name, for none I could invent would have so appropriate a flavor. It was John Scripture, and he was assisted, from time to time, by an aged and lunatic father who, in his lucid intervals, would be let out from his captivity under the eaves of the lodge to putter amid the lewd topiarian extravagance of the hedges. The doctor was to come down when he could, with a promise of some good golf, long nights of exquisite silence, and a ghost or two thrown in if his fancy ran that way. It was characteristic of his rather ponderous humor that, in writing to fix a day, he addressed Cazalet at The Creeps, Seven Oaks, Kent. When he arrived, it was to find his host away from home and not due back until all hours. Barrack was to dine alone with a reproachful setter for a companion, and not wait up. His bedroom on the ground floor was beautifully paneled from footboard to ceiling, but some misguided housekeeper under the fourth George had fallen upon the lovely woodwork with a can of black varnish. The dowry, brought by a Cazalet bride of the mauve decade, had been invested in a few vintage bathrooms, and one of these had replaced a prayer closet that once opened into this bedroom. There was only a candle to read by, but the light of the full moon came waveringly through the vines that half-curtained the mullion windows. In this museum, Beric dropped off to sleep. He did not know how long he had slept when he found himself awake again, and conscious that something was astir in the room. It took him a moment to place the movement, but at last, in a patch of moonlight, he made out a hunched figure that seemed to be sitting with bent, engrossed head in the chair by the door. It was the hand, or rather the whole arm, that was moving, tracing a recurrent, if irregular, course in the air. At first the gesture was teasingly half-familiar, and then Beric recognized it as the one a woman makes when embroidering. There would be a hesitation as if the needle were being thrust through some taut, resistant material, and then each time, the long, swift, sure pull of the thread. To the startled guest, this seemed the least menacing activity he had ever heard ascribed to a ghost. But, just the same, he had only one idea, and that was to get out of that room with all possible dispatch. His mind made a hasty reconnaissance. The door into the hall was out of the question, for madness lay that way. At least he would have to pass right by that weaving arm. Nor did he relish a blind plunge into the thorny shrubbery beneath his window and a barefoot scamper across the frosty turf. Of course, there was the bathroom. But that was small comfort if he could not get out of it by another door. In a spasm of concentration, he remembered that he had seen another door. And just at the moment of this realization, he heard the comfortingly actual sound of a car coming up the drive and guessed that it was his host returning. In one magnificent movement, he leaped to the floor, bounded into the bathroom, and bolted its door behind him. The floor of the room beyond was quilted with moonlight. Wading through that, he arrived, breathless but unmolested, in the corridor. Further along, he could see the lamp left burning in the entrance hall, and hear the clatter of his host closing the front door. As Beric came hurrying out of the darkness to greet him, Cazalet boomed his delight at such affability, and famished by his long, cold ride, proposed an immediate raid on the larder. The doctor, already sheepish at his recent panic, said nothing about it, and was all for food at once. With lighted candles held high, the foraging party descended on the offices, and mine host was decanting on the merits of cold roast beef, cheddar cheese, and milk as a light midnight snack, when he stumbled over a bundle on the floor. With a cheerful curse at the old goody of the kitchen who was always leaving something about, he bent to see what it was this time, and let out a whistle of surprise. Then, by two candles held low, he and the doctor saw something they will not forget while they live. It was the body of the cook. Just the body. The head was gone. On the floor alongside lay a bloody cleaver. "Old Scripture, by God!" Cazalet cried out, and in a flash Beric guessed. Still clutching a candle in one hand, he dragged his companion back through the interminable house to the room from which he had fled, motioning him to be silent, tiptoeing the final steps. That precaution was wasted, for a regimen could not have disturbed the rapt contentment of the ceremony still in progress within. The old lunatic had not left his seat by the door. Between his knees, he still held the head of the woman he had killed, scrupulously, happily, crooning at his work. He was plucking out the gray hairs, one by one.
That was Moonlight Sonata by Alexander Wolcott, read by James Reeser. For book enthusiasts out there, this story, to the best of our knowledge, is not currently in print, but we came across it in a terrific old anthology published by Bantam Books in 1961 called 75 Short Masterpieces. Better yet, if you get really lucky, perhaps you'll come across a copy of the October 1931 issue of The New Yorker, where the story first appeared. Also recommended is another rare example of Wolcott's foray into horror fiction called Full Fathom Five. Happy hunting! The Midnight Reading is produced by Gustavo Rodriguez and Ali Silva for Fireside Mystery Productions, with additional production by Greg Russ and Daniel Graves. Our audio engineer is Bill Hefner, and our show was recorded at Silo Studios in Shirley, New York. Our show was written by Sylvan Sandovar, and our theme music is by Martina Da Silva. Stay tuned for the next installment of The Midnight Reading by subscribing to the Fireside Mystery Theater podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and our favorite hosting service, Audioboom. Rate and review us. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is @FiresideMystery. And for those of you in the New York City area, mark your calendars. Fireside Mystery Theater returns to the stage for a brand new season of thrilling and chilling original radio drama, Sunday, September 25th, 7 p.m. at the Slipper Room, for a show we call Laugh, Clown, Laugh. Tickets on sale soon at slipperroom.com. This is Ali Silva, encouraging you to go out there and discover the best of dark literature at your favorite bookstore or local library. Thank you, kind listeners, for joining us. And be sure to mind the shadows.